Dave Kell was a rather remarkable man. I knew him fairly well.
I see.
The 30s. He was nearly 6 feet tall. He may have weighed 135 pounds.
Well.
He was never able to buy insurance.
Well.
And he lived to well into his 80s.
Well. Now, look here. I've got another little point I think I could make on Drury for you, if you like. Now, where was it? Oh, yes, I remember. I was home. I always call Barry home. Once, within a few weeks of the death of my brother, took me on the occasion on which I speak. And I called Mr. Drury, who was then sheriff. Now, he was successor to his father, incidentally. That's an interesting little point.
Yes.
Honorable Charles became Sheriff Drury after he ceased to be a minister of the crown. And then after Ernest Drury ceased to be Premier of Ontario, somewhere along the line there, he was appointed sheriff. Would he be appointed by Hepburn? I don't think
Henry.
He would be. Hey?
Henry.
Well, Henry was a conservative, though.
I know, but Drury was pretty hard up at that point.
Yes.
And he had refused part. You see, there was an increase proposed for it, and the government voted through an increase, and he didn't take it in sexual indemnity.
Yeah.
And then he wrote back. He said, I'm afraid that I was, words to this effect. I'm afraid that I was a little unwise in that, and that I could seriously stand an appointment of some sort to compensate for it, because I really need the money. And he was hoping for, I've forgotten what position, but the Henry government was willing to go along and gave him the appointment.
I see. Well, that's very interesting, and it shows that some good things can come out of the Conservative Party. At any rate, of course, Henry government was quite, Henry was a much better sample than Ferguson, in my opinion. Much better. Well, let's see now. I went to see Ernest, and in his office in the old courthouse there, and we had a very interesting conversation, as I remember. He told me a few things. He said, I remember we got talking about buying on the installment plan. And he burst out, there's thousands of people in this country don't own the very beds they sleep on. He was all against that, what seemed to him the unthriftiness of installment buying. And then we got talking about his family, I guess, and he said he had grandsons. One of his grandsons was conducting the farm, I think, and that represented, I'm pretty sure he told me, that boy represented the fifth generation on that farm. And he was a widower at the time, been a widower for many years. And he dropped into a personal note there and said, of course, I'd never remarry. I live with my son and grandson. I would never remarry, he said, because my first wife meant so much to me. It was such a perfect marriage. I remember her using some such words as that. It was such a perfect marriage, I'd never dream of remarrying. So I thought that was very nice. Well, I guess the rest of the talk just ended in gossip. Those are the only things I remember about him. But my younger colleague here at Queens, Frederick Gibson, was trying to get gather up papers of prominent public men some years ago. And he went to see Drury, and Drury told him that he had no papers. Practically had no papers. Fred failed there. So whether that's the condition of the Drury papers, I don't know whether he had them somewhere or other that he'd forgotten about. And I think at that point, any reminiscences of any value at all that I might have of Ernest Drury and would come to an end. I sort of felt that, I wouldn't claim to know him well, but I sort of felt that I knew all about him because there was his farm out the road a few miles, and I'd always talked about the juries and They were part of the landscape, as it were. After all, the area was small. When I was a boy, Barrie was only a town of 5,000 people. It never grew very much until after the First World War. And you couldn't amount to very much unless without getting to be a local figure and known pretty well. Yes, I think we might add to what I was saying about Simcoe County historians that it's very probable that the environment there, North Simcoe, had considerable effect in directing interest and pleasure to history. Everybody knows the story of the Huronia. Everybody, that has been many times written. And I would doubt if there were many young men and women of inquiring mind brought up in any of our towns, Barrie, Collingwood, Pentang, Midland, Orilla, who wouldn't be fairly familiar with the story of Huronia, Champlain's visits. Well, look at the big monument in Orilla to Champlain, and that sort of thing. So it's an interesting example of the influence of an environment on subsequent civilization. Now, you see, we here in Kingston, we could say much the same sort of thing, but if you take an interior county of Ontario, what shall we say, Perth or Wellington or somewhere down there, or something like that, they would have the people brought up there would have a much more limited range, it would seem to me, of interest in the past. Simply because the past is not there under their nose as it is in Simcoe County. So perhaps the Simcoe County historians come by their craft honestly.
No, no. You just go ahead. And the stableman has put up her horse. He brought her own food, being a hurry. And the man was standing there looking at something in his hand. Father said, have you found something of value? And he said, no, but I put Miss Drury's horse away. I groomed it up and I fed it and I harnessed it up again for her. And she gave me 2 cents and said, now, my good man, don't spend that all on drink.
This is
that was typical of the Drury family. Yes, I remember when the old girl died. Because my sister was having a birthday party and Irene Drury was coming to it. And her older sister called for it. She said, you know, my aunt is very, very low. And you better not be out. I knew the other Drury family, the second Drury family. I never met Irene Drury. I've been to political meetings on the conservative side where they were talking against it.
Well, he was very strongly liberal.
Oh, yeah. And Parson and the tree, all the juries were, every last one of them. It was a family thing. It goes for making good premiers. I wouldn't say that the present day ones are...
But you know, one thing, that's strange. I've heard otherwise that he didn't waste any money. But he said in his book, Farmer Cleaning, as he said, one of the things that people like best is the government.
It's quite true.
Yeah. And he apparently realized that he had to go against his own tenets to be more extravagant in government.
Imagine that story of my father's is typical of the whole family. I really do.
It could well be.
Well, my brother Archie went to school with Marion Drury, the eldest one. She was a pop music. They came into Barry when the girls were in high school, except the youngest one. My sister went with the youngest one of the girls. But they're beyond public school age. They went to got the early education. His sister, Elgin Cromston. The only thing I know about Ernie Drury is that he came into Barry to go to high school, and I told you his nickname.
Yeah, well, his nickname was Cafe.
And many years later, when he ran for premier, he was very much against the liquor laws.
Liquor trade.
The availability of getting it, yes, the very clear, all like that. But they had a funny little skit, if you want me to say that. Mm-hmm. They had an affair for him once there in Barry, the banquet. And the skit was this, Ernie, I've been thinking, what would you and Rainey do if all the citizens of this country drank Corona and home brew?
Corona was a big thing then.
I guess so. These are only things I've heard when come home from the banquet, my father and tell them, my brother tell these things.
These are the answers.
Not Arthur, but my older brother.
Yeah, these are the answers.
Yes, that was really quite a favorite, and he took it all in very good part indeed. I've been at lots of political meetings, and Mr. W.A. Boys, or Pro Boys, lambasted the jury from A to Z.
What did you call them, Pro Boys?
Pro Boys, yes. He was a great tennis player at one time.
Oh, and they called him Pro for that.
Well, that was his nickname.
Yeah.
He was a lawyer in Barry. Belonged to an aristocratic set, as they used to call him. He was a very fine man. Amongst our friends, he stood for good administration, and he was never defeated on the Conservative ticket. He was a member of Parliament in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
Never defeated. And I know my own husband's people, the minister, anything happened, well, we'll go in and talk that over with poor boys, whatever he says we'll do. Well, that was the affection he was held in. And being brought up that way, he went to Conservative meetings.
I tried to go to them all.
Oh, I went. When I was a youngster and they had a grand opera house in Barry, that's where they were held, and my older sister, Lily, was there.
Where was the grand opera house?
On Calgary Street, just the other side of Clapperton, and it was all burnt down. It was as big as the grand opera house in Toronto, and it was a wonderful place for meetings of all kinds at that time. And there's a story behind the reason we had it too, but it's not a story that we should be publishing.
Why?
Well, you don't want to put it in mine. I wouldn't like to say. It's all settled many years ago, and you wouldn't want to hurt anybody's reputation.
No, we really don't want to.
No, you can wait for those. I can tell you when a different one's going if you want to stop it.
You can tell. And you were saying that boys and who was it? Creswick?
Creswick.
That's C-R?
C-R-E-S-W-I-C-K. And some later was a warden of Chemical Company.
They and some others, you think, ran the town in those days?
Oh, no.
I mean, they were the big
kids. Well, you'd call them leading citizens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't mean in that.
They were very fine people.
And who were some of the others that you mentioned that were the prominent ones in the town?
Oh, Dr. Morton, and our doctor was a very fine, prominent citizen, and Judge Arda and his family, and Sir Senator Down, who was formerly Sir James Down or something, our only knight in the town of Barry, and the McCarthy's and others who afterwards set the tone for the political party called McCarthyism.
Uh-huh.
You've heard this. Dr. McCarthy and the rest of them was a sort of a branch of the Liberal Party that eventually went back into it. We're always accused of Dalton McCarthy of cutting up the ridings in Dunkel County to make quite sure that it separated Barry from the northern part so that they would get their member elected, because Barry was very conservative, English conservative as it could be. And the southern part of
Colonel O'Brien.
Colonel O'Brien was a wonderful man, but he
was
very in Barry. He lived in
Sandy Bay. He was very English. Now, he started, I guess, some of that.
It's clear how people come back into your life. As I told you, my sister was Victorian order nurse in Toronto. One day they sent her, they said, there's not in your district, but there's a Miss O'Brien who'd like you to take her under your wing to live in this one of these big apartments. So my sister went there, and she said, what's your name? She said, my name is Laura. You must come from Barry. She said, I do. Oh, lady. I don't think you want it. She said, I'm an O'Brien from Shanty Bay. Mother said, oh, yes, I've always heard of you.
That's quite a coincidence.
Yes, and she's had a nurse from the Victorian order before, a much younger one that was pretty clipped. That's why my sister was sent there. And when she went back into the office, after the old lady got better, the supervisor said, come over here, I want to feel your wings. She said, what do you mean? She said, well, Miss O'Brien made a point of calling up and said, I'm very thankful that you have one lady at least on the staff. So you see how it comes back, the older ones, they did stick together. They did stick together.
Oh, I expect they would.
And my sister found a lot of that in Toronto. She'd go to places and they'd say, did you come from Barry? She said, yes. Well, I thought so when I heard your name, because the name wasn't a common one.
No, I don't.
My brother found that out, too, that you run into Barry people everywhere. When he was going to Harvard, he belonged to the Canadian Club then. There was a dinner meeting that beside his staff, and he said to him, where did you come from in Simcoe County? He said, oh, a little bit of a place. My father was the Methodist minister of a little bit of a church called Crown Hill.
Yeah.
And he said, I went to high school in the town of Barry. Archie Tittle put it out.
What was his name, do you remember?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of these old Barry, do you remember the citizens?
I sure did, yes, all of them. The citizens of the governor of the jail and a pillar of Cottage Street United Church or Methodist Church. Annie Sisson married a Dr. Jamison from out near out at Edgar near Crown Hill. And Sisson's, one of the Sisson's boys, J.B. Sisson, was quite a historian, wasn't he?
And there was a judge, wasn't there?
Wasn't I know of.
Well, maybe I'm wrong on that. Yeah, she was quite an historian. And then, did you ever come across John S. Woodsworth when she came from Barry? Woodsworth. You know, as the leader of the...
No, they never had been married,
did he? He went to high school there. Well, he was a cousin, I think, of the Sisson.
Oh, I read his life in the Chatelaine, yes.
Yeah.
Well, that surprised me.
Yeah, he and Drury had known each other in Barry in school.
Well, my brother, Charlie, might have known them, but he probably didn't make as much. You know, they weren't as intimate as the people that you knew a lot better.
Oh, no, he was only there briefly.
Yes, I did read that.
And You took quite an interest in politics in your life, and it's a family interest.
My family is, yes. Mm-hmm.
And did you retain that interest?
Yes, I do. I do. My friends used to say to me years ago, we'd go down to Canadian Port and Barry, and I'd start, and they'd always threaten me to get me a soap box, but I haven't got it yet.
Well, that, you remember the Drury family in that connection, in the play.
I remember them, my father, as I told you, said that poor old Ernie, he's riding a UFO horse to power now. This is about the third one he's tried, perhaps he'll make it.
The conservatives never gave him credit for just working for the farmers, did they?
Myself, I think he made a very good job as premier. He started this Highway 11 out of Toronto before we had a decent track to go on, and got it through as far as Barrie before he finished. And I remember them making a big fuss about him buying a coal scuttle and cost so much money.
Do you remember that?
I remember my mother remarking upon it. And do you know what she said?
No.
She said, I don't care what they say about him. If there was one thing about the jury, they were very honest people. And I'm quite sure Ernie, being his father's son, wouldn't do anything that was wrong like that. That was pretty good from a conservative.
That was pretty good. And I think she was right. There never was a coal scuttle.
No, I think she was right.
It was just a story.
But you see, you couldn't. He was a liberal.
Yeah.
But he was, well, that was my mother. She believed in giving credit where credit was due.
Yeah. You say she didn't accommodate well to Canada, huh?
Oh, yes, she did. It was my father that didn't.
Oh, it's your father that did.
Oh, he's always coming back over home and talking about it. I don't know why he liked it so well, because I've never been to England. I don't know just what his life was like over there. I know he could swim well when he came, and he could skate well, which was unusual for an Englishman, and he was a wonderful scutter, a rower.
Yeah.
And he taught us all to row.
He did? He
taught us to row and to feather our oars and to back and clamp and everything in a boat, and to be careful the way to get in and out of it.
Well, Arthur kept his interest in boats, didn't
he? He kept his interest in boats, yes.
He spoke to
him. And he taught the boys to swim. Taught the girls, boys.
And your father taught the boys to swim.
Oh, yes.
But he didn't teach the girls. Well, was that common in your youth, to not teach the girls and things like that?
Well, the girls were in a different category, I guess. But this Stanford girl, I don't put that in there. She was like a fish in the water. Her grandfather, she lived with her. We never knew why she lived with her. Got old, Dr. Oliver, but she did live with the Olivers, and they had a summer cottage at Big Bay Point, and we used to go down there, and that's where I knew Ray Sanders.
Uh-huh.
And I found out later why she lived with her grandparents, but she was like a fish in the water.
But as a rule, the girls did less swimming.
Oh, yes. So what they do now?
Yeah. Can you remember anything of the political meetings that you went to in those early days?
Mm-hmm. Lots of funny things. I remember McCarthy telling old second-hand John, the second-hand son, Barry, he kept interrupting McCarthy when McCarthy was speaking. That was Dalton McCarthy. And he'd say, sit down, John. Sit down. You're not going to get that post office job this time. We think that was very funny.
Yeah.
Very funny. But they made good speeches. And Mr. Boyce was always a good speaker.
Well, McCarthy was conservative, wasn't he, too?
I believe he started as that, and then he became the McCarthyite,
yeah.
The McCarthyite party, and then ultimately the Liberal Party absorbed them, as they usually do, you know, the party that
came over. I didn't realize that.
McCarthy lived next close to the College Street Methodist Church.
And did you know any of the other juries? Did you know any of the Ernie's children? Oh, were you out of Barry by that time?
Oh, they even had any children,
oh, yeah.
Didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I remember one of them married somebody in Barry and lived in Barry. No, I wouldn't. No, they never lived in Barry.
No, just the daughter. She lives there now.
Does she?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Oh, what is her name?
Rowena. I don't know.
And then she won married a Partridge, too, and that boy that ran for the NDP last
year. Yes, I read about
him. He was a grandchild.
Yeah. I left there, and I left Ernie Drury being my brother's Charlie's age. I would like to be grown up and out of there before. I never met any of them, never heard of them.
Oh.
Oh, I have heard of them, yes. I know the older one getting married to somebody who lived over Allendale.
I'd like to hear more of the attitude that the
remember his father. And after the father died, the Honorable Charles Drury, Mrs. Drury brought her daughters into Barry, and they lived in Barry. And that's when I became acquainted with them. But I never knew Ernie Duran ever even met him. But I've admired the work he did in reforestation.
That was a big thing.
It was.
He didn't start it, but he gave it his life.
Yes. He used to say about those farms on the Penetang Road that every windy day they changed hands.
Yes.
Going across the road. Well, you see, that's what he would be brought up there, and he'd know what was necessary for it. And then it was his idea of covering the pine places with new trees again after our forefathers had sold out to all the lumber barons around Barry.
Who were some of the lumber barons? Do you remember any of them?
Yes, the Burtons and the Diamonds, Nickel Diamonds and Sons.
I was at a meeting with his grandson's partner.
Bill Diamond? Okay, doesn't he liquor travel?
No, this one is in the printing business. This is a grandson.
A grandson?
Yeah, a very old grandson.
Oh, I wouldn't remember anyone anyway. And I didn't know there was any left living in... I knew there was one left living in Barry at that time.
No, this cat doesn't live in Jack Diamond.
Well, there was a Jack Diamond that was the nephew of the other Diamond. And he looked after some of the things there. Well, then the Burtons, they were lumber people. And the Kundals, you remember the great big house that was pulled down?
Just pulled down.
Yeah. Well, that was the Kundals' property, and they were the ones that made their living and money out of all the pine plains there. And they built in Barry called Kundals Road, still standing on Bayfield Street.
Yeah.
I never knew any of it. Well, I never really knew any of the Kundals, but they were generation or so before me, I guess. But I've been in that great big Kundal house, and oh boy, there was a fireplace in nearly every room.
Yes, I think there was.
My brother, a friend of my older brother, owned the farm there, Wallace Brown, just passed out of their hands the other 2 years. A huge street, a really old place. Oh, I've heard my mother tell lots of tales about the early days in Barry.
Correct.
And about on the front street, every place had a veranda over it. And there was a terrific fire. And these verandas carried the flames from one to the other. And Papa went down to see what was going and left her with the small children away up where they lived up Covington Street. And she stood up as long as she could, and she bundled the children into the baby carriage. She went down to see what was happening to the town of Barry. So all the...
The women weren't supposed to do that, no.
Their place was more or less a home, I suppose. Anyway, they went practically the whole of the front street down, and that was under the big fire, since because then they prohibited all the
wooden
shutter buildings, whatever you call them, because they were the fire trap. And Barry started to... Barry wasn't cut out for Dunlop Street, it was the main street. When it was laid out by the English people, under Simcoe, it was Collier Street, much wider.
Yeah.
And then the shoreline was to be preserved, but the other just like property, it grew.
I guess the railroad might have said something.
Well, the railroad didn't come into Barry at that time that way. You know that?
Didn't come in.
Came in from Allendale, came up about 4 blocks up on Bayfield Street. That's as far as it went. When my mother and father went to Barry in 1870, it was called the Rodham Hamilton one.
Yeah.
Well, it came in across what she called the Commons, the way out around where the industrial area is now.
Yeah.
And across where Queen's Park and the hospital is, and the basement was the corner of Bayfield and down the Five Street. So the forefathers of our town practically gave me waterfront away to the railway company.
It happened many times in Canada.
Too many times.
Yeah.
Too many times. But that's where it used to come. And then it branched off from Allendale to go to Collingwood, which is also very historical.
Oh, yes. It was to be a big town of Simcoe County one time.
Collingwood, yes. Yeah. Do you know its original name?
No, I don't know.
Hen and Chicken.
Hen and Chicken. I don't think I heard that before.
Communion Day. Not that I remember it, but there was an elderly woman working for me. She seemed elderly to me. And I said, dear, well, tomorrow is the 1st of July, Dominion Day, and we're going to take the children close to the beach. She looked at me and she said, Isla, that's the first Dominion Day that ever was. I said, 1867? Yes, she said. And we walked from Elmsdale to the mouth of the river. And the Collingwood people came down on the sand, and we went across the bridge, and they had celebrated the horse racing on the sand. And where they go now by the thousands out here at the beach, she said, we followed our way by the blazes on the trees.
Right.
And with such a hot day that one great big strapping farmer fainted dead away with the heat, and she was so the first of July that ever was. And this was about 1925, I guess. But I thought that was quite an event.
You don't remember her name?
Oh, yes. She'd been a Ritchie, Big Jen, what they called her. The Ritchie's around here, and she was Mrs. Irwin. There was, and this man that famous, his name was Strath. That's a big name around here.
Strath's a big name.
Mm-hmm. But the Ritchie's and the Rowett's were the settlers around here. But that's not the kind of history of, that's all in the police emergency anyway.
Yeah.
I collected a lot of that for them, too.
Your work with the Creechmere history must have brought you in contact with all of the farmers around here, too.
Oh, I used to pick one member of a different farm and get them to write something up, and then I revised it.
Oh, the farm. And also the farmers. You'd have quite a bit of
contact
with the
farmers. Yes, I have. Lots of little tales that they told me. Now, one time, Elmsdale was the mission station of Hillsdale, because Hillsdale was on the Penetang Road, was much more important.
Uh-huh.
And Elmsdale didn't amount to so much, and the minister from there came over here to preach.
This is in the Methodist Church.
No, this is in the Presbyterian.
The Presbyterian.
This is the Presbyterian Irish, Scots and Irish settlement here. Elston was the Irish Catholic.
Yeah.
And this was strictly Presbyterian and Anglican, I guess, and Methodist too. But Presbyterians of the Ritchies and the Rowetts and the Straths and all of those people, you'll still find them over in the Presbyterian Church.
Uh-huh.
Old time Catholic. And they settled along the Wye River. And that's all in the speech in our history about the Archer boy that was lost and found out what a wonderful section of land this was up here. Wonderful.
This was good farming land, wasn't it?
Pardon?
This was good farming land.
Yes, it's a so-called Confederate government settled the soldiers from 1812 and 14 of land grants. And they gave them to them on the Penetang Road, which was pure sand.
Yeah.
Pure sand. And the tale is this Archer boy, and the Archers were English people. He was set to minding the cattle of or Lakeway. And they wandered away. And he kept going after them because he knew how precious they were. And he got lost. But he used his head, and he gave the cattle their way, and they followed this river. And then finally he found them and caught up with them and turned them around and let them follow the river back. 4 days he was lost and given up for dead. But he found this wonderful clay land, and he filled his pocket with the dirt to show them what he had found. With elm trees that reached the sky, he said. So they came in here and they took up land all along the river, the Ritchies and the Rowetts.
Of course, this is where Elmville gets its name from, the elm.
Well, it's called Elm Flats. Stone's Corners and Elm Flats and Elm Vale. This is that thing. On the coastlands that there are milling people here. They came from England as timber cruisers for the British government. They were in lumber people in England. And to buy the elm trees for the mast for the sailing vessel. That's how long ago. And they settled in Penetang to King, which was the end of the Penetang Road. It's quite historical. And then came down this way, too. And Copeland's are still in business there, you know, mm-hmm. the lumber company.
Yeah, my dad was a lumberman, and I think he used to buy from
me. Well, he liked to work at these ends that they all meet together in Colorado. But this man, old man's name was Old Man Archer, and he said, I could tell her a lot of things if she came down here. And that's one of the things he told us when we were collecting material to Township and County.
Is that right?
This was Clarence Sage. She was, and her husband was the representative of the UFO when they first went on the market.
But well, that was kind of a obvious file of you, wasn't it, to get mixed up with the UFO?
Well, it wasn't anything to do with the UFO, but I say Mrs. Sage's husband had that. Now, Mrs. Sage is a wonderful woman, and I think that Sage is a lot like her.
They often got moved around a lot more than that.
He could have, but he didn't wish to.
No, they used to call it bumping, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, not of late years, not on the railway. You couldn't because there was too much bookkeeping. It was all advertised. Certain day, every week, if there was any vacancy, it was advertised, and merit and seniority gave you the position. I don't know what it was like in the old days.
Well, back around 1915, as I remember, if there was a job came open, the senior man could bump for you, it's called.
Oh, yeah, but it was always advertised on the telegram, telegraph thing, and you put in for it, and if your merit and seniority, you played it if it could happen.
A lot of them moved around that way, but
a lot of them moved a lot, and a lot of them stayed put a lot. It just depended on your disposition, I suppose. And you got to know a lot of the people who are going to different things where other railroad people were,
So what changes do you notice in Barrie now? Do you find it in a strange city today?
I do. There's very few people. Simmons Store was the only one I feel familiar in.
Yeah.
And three generations, I guess as my people dealt with three or four generations of Simmons people, always. And I still get my fur coat made by Mr. Simmons taking me to Toronto and taking me to the Burger. And still get my things
there.
Everything I want.
Do you think there are about four generations of Simmons have been in business there?
Well, look, if you were in the Barrie Cemetery, you'd see the forefather there was born at Frankfurt on Main in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Came to Barrie, and his son was George Simmons, and his his son went into business after him as Vivian Simmons, and Bart Simmons, Vivian's son, he's in business. Whether Bart's children follow, he has two boys, and I don't think either one of them are in the store. But that means four generations.
Four generations.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that store didn't do it so
long ago. Oh, my, yes. They sold hats and caps, and they made their furs. They made up the furs. Yeah. I can remember holding the Simmons. You'd go to get a little hat on the youngster's head, and she'd measure, put around the elastic, put on your chin. The kid nowadays would be disgusted, wouldn't it?
Right.
We were quite proud of him. HMS, this one, HMS, that.
Yeah. I remember that.
They were very fine people.
Well, I never knew Barry all that well, of course. I know Barry now much better than I ever knew before. But it had quite a history. And you were speaking earlier of this settlement.
Well, the naval people seem to have a lot to do with it. You see, most of the streets are named after naval battles. Wakefield Street, Mulcaster Street, Dunlop Street, and there's Nelson Square down the eastern end of the town, and Coddington is another name for it. Collier's another, and Mulcaster. Then you number them. I think they must have been naval people that named the streets, or else they wouldn't have had so many.
Well, I would think that's probably true. They made it a determined effort to settle a number of the gentry, officers and gentry. Whole area of Simcoe County to keep it loyal.
Oh, yes, and they did a good job of it.
Yeah, they did.
And then Captain Saltray, you see, there's another one, Lake Simcoe. Oh, they did. They did a good job of it. I'm kind of saying it's much like Barry. There's quite a few of them settled there, you know. The Thompsons, the Copelands, from the Rakes, and there's Dr. Rakes. One used to be in Barry, his brother up there. Colonel Rakes is out from Barry on the road to Shanty Bay.
I met one of them recently. Which one was it? I think he was from around Shanty Bay.
Well, there was only one family there, and that was Colonel Rakes. I think Major Rakes, I guess it was. Rakes Crossing. Yeah, he had some descendants.
Well, I think it would be one of his descendants.
Yeah.
A local historian, I believe.
No, there was Miss Rakes. Major Rakes had them. Yeah, I think it was a colonel. Yeah, Anyway, that doesn't matter. He was a very conservative king. At Rakes Crossing, that's where the railroad crossed over, and they owned the land on each side of it, you see. But between Barry and Shanty Bay, they weren't at Shanty Bay, they weren't at Barry, they were halfway.
Well, you'd remember politics back to the days of the open ballot, almost, wouldn't you?
I never had a vote until...
No, but you'd remember your father speaking of the open ballot.
No, I don't remember anything about that. Probably I wasn't interested in it. He had an open mind on politics. If I took him to task one election coming up for taking a subscription to the Globe, I said, yeah, I see him. He said, well, how am I to refute their arguments if I only know one side of the case? And he says, if I take their papers, then I'm much more able to refute what they say if I'm able to. I read books. So he really had an open mind, didn't he?
We've read the Globe since it was a weekly paper.
Who?
Our family.
Have you? Now, another thing, when I married my husband, he was conservative, of course, too, and we took the little empire.
Mm-hmm.
Never took the Globe. Used to call it, if I heard one man call it, the Scott Presbyterian Bible.
No, it was. It was, really.
Yes, I expect it was. At one time, you know, it used to be called the Empire. My mother said.
The
Mail and Empire amalgamated against the Globe. The Empire was another.
And Toronto. Yeah. Like this.
We always got the Mail and Empire. We didn't have the weekly. We had three weekly papers in Barry and I was the youngster. The Advance, the Examiner, and the Gazette.
Were they still on any political anymore?
The Advance was our picture. We took them all. No, we took the only Saturday morning came out and started up. In my time, it was quite a paper. The Walls brothers from up here started it. And that's how the Barry Examiner ultimately took over the Examiner. And a very good paper, Ken Walls of Silver, really the proprietor of it, or chief stockholder, I believe.
You say that Alec McCauley sold his paper.
Mm-hmm.
Where is he now, then?
In town here, just on the front street.
Just retired?
Yeah. Well, they have summer property, I believe. They sold some of it, and they have some of it. I did have some Christmas tree property. Old people around here do different things, not the farm, you know.
Yeah. He was quite a politician, too, Alec.
A liberal.
Was he a liberal? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On his father's side, you would see. I wouldn't like to say it, but on his wife's side, people, husbands and wives don't always vote the same as they used to, you know.
No, no.
My mother had to change her politics. Her father was Gus and a Gladstone man. I guess she grew up under the conservative banner in Canada. She was an ardent conservative.
Yes, the husband had a lot more influence. There wasn't much woman's lib then, was there?
No, I suppose there wasn't. I don't know. I believe in woman's lib myself. Not the ridiculous side of it, but I believe that if a person is educated for a certain job, the sex can measure into it. You can do the job, give them the job.
I think that's right.
And I believe in discipline for young people. That's not a good word today, I suppose, is it?
No.
Well, I believe in it.
Because I have
been thanked by my daughter for bringing her up the way I did.
Oh, I've done
to stand on her own feet and face the facts of life and learn to cope with things. And she thinks those are three of the most important things in bringing up a family.
You still do think that, don't you?
Right.
I say, you haven't changed your mind on that.
No, I haven't. I think children need discipline. I think they want it. But they don't know they want it. I don't believe in this, all this permissiveness. But I do like the young people of the day to a certain extent, because I think they're much more open, much more honest about the vital facts of life than the Victorian era ever acknowledged.
I think you and I will be close together, I think.
Well, my brother doesn't agree with me on lots of things, you know, well, he never did. And he never backed down on it. And I think perhaps he has just a little bit of admiration for my stand on things. You wouldn't tell me that, but I have certainly.
Or is he more liberal with young people?
Well, he's a liberal to the fact. No, he isn't. He's worse than I would be, actually. He doesn't understand them the same. There's a difference when you have your own children and bring them up, you know. You learn as you go along.
Yeah.
And, you just land. My sister-in-law was the youngest member of her family, so she would have no younger brothers and sisters to contend with.
He spoke strongly of his beliefs in the old-fashioned virtues.
Yes, I know.
And, of course, I can't disagree with him.
I don't disagree with him, but I do think there are some things that you can look at from different lengths from our Victorian forefathers.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And I do think you have to move with the time. Not oppose them all. Look to see what's best in the present day young people's idealism. I think perhaps they're more open with things, much more open. And I think the others they hid everything that they did. And I don't think that's very fair.
No.
I think you should have a family that's not afraid to join with you in things, don't you?
Oh, I agree that. Yes, I certainly agree. It's a hard thing to accomplish sometimes, to keep a balanced view.
You know, when you're bringing your family up, there are many things you do that you wonder about, whether you're doing the proper thing or not. And then you find, I'm lucky, mine turned out splendidly, my two girls. And you find husbands, grandfather did very well. Start in earning something towards it. And when you get a certain amount, then we'll talk about getting one. And I said, well, that's the way I like to see it done. And I said, well, if I was away and he hadn't got his money, and he'd come around, he might want to spend it for the weekend. He doesn't spend that. That goes into the bank. You never know when he might need it. So you see, that's the kind of thing I believe in. If you want a thing badly enough, help to earn that thing. And then you appreciate it more. I still believe in that.
Yes, I think so.
When he came on, he says, doesn't need it very badly. And he says, why? And I said, oh, no, not too badly with this hot weather. I said, but you might miss the money. I would. I said, you cut it anyway.
Your husband being on the railroad, the depression wouldn't have affected you badly.
Pardon?
Your husband?
No.
Oh, you had
well, it affected us in that your wages were reduced at times. But never did we know what it was.
You never?
No. No, my son-in-law in Toronto, his father was a railway conductor out of Toronto, and he said the same thing. My sister said the same. And she said the mean little things that we were always postponed was the ones that came to school in cozy clothes. They called them. I didn't know what cozy clothes were, but not around Elmville. Elmville's always been a very prosperous thing, like, very prosperous.
How do you find when you look back in your early days of marriage and housekeeping, how do you find the difference in housekeeping today? Do you long for the old days? Or
I do not. No, I don't think anybody in their right mind would.
No.
Do you? No, I do not.
You had to carry your water.
Not until I was married. We always had water and dairy in the town.
You did?
Yeah. You said the old McKenna on the sidewalk?
Yeah.
And some of them are getting cement, which is something very new. So we take the hose, and when we saw a crack in the cabin, we held the hose down into it and make great big holes. Well, very awful. We got high side about this. But no, we always had water. Barry was renowned for good water.
Well, Barry has a great water table, you know. It's supposed to be an underground river in Barry.
We're supposed to be one here, too. The Elmdale has. We could say there's enough water here for the city of.
Is that right?
No. For a while they ran short of it. They drilled a new well back up over here and they came into a terrific amount of water.
And what about, did you heat it by wood?
Pardon?
Did you heat by a wood stove in your house?
In our house?
On your
coal and wood.
Coal and wood.
Coal and wood. Yeah, coal and wood. We have gas though, gas light.
In that?
In that old house though?
Yeah, in You wouldn't have them here.
Oh, no, not here.
You have electric light here?
Mm-hmm.
When you were first married?
Mm-hmm.
I never used electric light.
It was made by the Copeland Living Company at one time.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And at home, we had partly gas, partly lamp. Bedrooms all had gas lights. You see, the gas was manufactured in there. The gas works were down by the bay. It was made out of coal or something.
Coal, yes.
Yeah.
Coal.
And the house had gas and my father bought it. And then the bedroom for the...
That would be about, that would be about 1910, right?
Oh, no, it was long before that. This was my Ethel's brother born in 1878. He wasn't very old when they moved to the big house.
The amazing
his mother said he wrote down on every note of the furniture and back with it. Kept the whole day long.
You had gas? You had gas then in Barry?
Yes. It was in the house when he bought it. And the bedroom things, the pipes had run up and there was a big white globe on it.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had a little contraption that was made of wire and things, and that was to heat the baby's milk on in the middle of the night so you would never go down.
On the lamp.
It went over the globe and it stood there and you heated the milk. And so you wouldn't have to go downstairs and went home. So I can't say that I ever had to. Pioneer, you might know. We didn't. We had lots of water and we had a sink and things that go with it.
Well, you weren't as badly off as many of them.
Pardon?
You weren't as badly off as many of them in that respect.
No, I don't think I've ever been badly off, as you call it, or deprived.
Well, I don't think I have relatively either. But I certainly spent a lot of my life about running water and so on.
Well, I suppose you did.
Yeah.
country.
Yeah,
we don't have it. Mm-hmm. Here we all had flowing wells, and you had to carry the water in from where the water came up. You know, no pumps.
No pumps.
No, just flowing wells.
Yeah.
We had that at the summer cottage, too. Well, we had a summer cottage at Georgian Dam. And you put down a standpoint. The water comes down from the hill towards the bay, you know. And the water was just caught the water up. Mm-hmm.
Well, people are very fortunate when they have that. I've lived in places for long periods, and we had no water but what we would carry in 5 gallon tanks on the backs of donkeys.
You have?
Yes.
In different parts of the country?
Yeah.
But not here. Not here.
Canada.
No. Where about?
Oh, in the Amazon Valley. And in
South America?
South America. And in Persia.
You really were around with your father?
No, I was in the office.
Oil. I was reading Michener's story. Did you ever read it? The Drifters?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's curious. It's all about young people. Each chapter takes them. I haven't finished it yet. I've read his other books. And they are drifters. They take you into the different countries in Europe. Spain seems to be the theme where they all gather in and meet.
Well, I think he's probably talking about fairly recent times.
Oh, yes.
He wrote a very good book on Spain called Iberia.
Yeah, I read Iberia.
Well, there was a man there that he talks a lot about, Ken Vanderfort. And he has a picture of him. He's bearded, stubbed all with a beard. He says he was his Spanish advisor. Ken and I were great friends many years ago.
Well, on this one, he has a man from the Mutual Insurance Company of Minneapolis. And they have a certain amount of this up in the Central County. You have to go
right on. I was going to say that.
And the story is them trying to spend the firm's money for things to bring people together or do things around through the country. Geneva is his headquarters. So it takes you to a lot of different parts.
Well, this has been very interesting, and I think we've got some good local color on that.